All right, welcome back, everybody. Hello. My name is Doug Lloyd. I'm sure some of you are familiar with me from the short, so I figured I would dress in the same way that you're used to seeing me. But again, thank you so much for coming and being part of this workshop. We're really excited to have you here. This, as David mentioned, is going to be a bit of a fire hose. And at any point, if you have any questions about anything, whether I'm saying it or just comes up during the workshop or you're thinking about something, we have a Slido set up and you can head there, use CS50 as the event code, and you can post your questions there and we'll make efforts to answer them either during the sessions or in between or during breaks or whatever. So please feel free to use that as well. If you want to take notes, please do, of course, feel free. But if you don't, all of the materials, not all of them are there yet, but they will be. Like my slides are not there yet because I was just tweaking them before we got here. But they'll be available at that link there. That's a link to a Dropbox folder where you can download all of the resources from this workshop. So keep an eye on that as well. So I'm here today to talk about CS50 in a box. And there's really no box that is big enough to hold all of it. So this is a metaphorical box. There's not an actual box that is just CS50 that we just hand over. And it is a little bit like drinking from a fire hose. So I do apologize for that. Before I get into it, I want to tell you quickly a little bit about me and how I got to where I am. So I graduated from Harvard in class 2009, and I took CS50 myself in the fall of 2006, which was the last year before David took over. I came into college as a math major, and then I took a college math class, and I was not a math major after that. I switched to applied math. CS50 counted for part of applied math. But I just really enjoyed CS50 a lot, and so I actually ended up switching to computer science after taking it. And then the following year, David took over, and there was as typically happens when a professor takes over a class, there's a big surge in interest in the class. When I took CS50, it had about 120 students, and so there was a need for some additional teaching fellows. I was really excited about CS, and so I joined the staff as a teaching fellow, and I never really left. So this is going to be my 11th year on the staff of CS50. I was a teaching fellow for the first 9 years of my involvement. After I graduated from college, I actually went to law school. I am a licensed attorney. Clearly that was not something that I had that much fun doing either. I was in solo practice for a few years, and then a couple years ago, I actually reached out to David because I realized, you know, I was still TFing in the fall coming back, and I realized I was having more fun doing that than I was having during the other three seasons of the year, and I was like, maybe I should, you know, just leave the law stuff behind entirely. So I was actually going to go teach at a local high school that was just starting up a computer science department. They didn't have anything, and I asked David for a letter of recommendation, and he graciously agreed, but proposed instead that CS50 do this new CS Principles initiative, which was sort of, you know, gaining a lot of steam at the time, and I thought that was a great opportunity to take what we do instead of just bringing it to one classroom, to bring it to a lot of classrooms. And so I've been on the staff full time for almost 3 years now. So thank you for helping me to bring this to more than just that one classroom in that central Massachusetts town that I would have been in. It's exciting to see this brought to so many places, as we saw on the map earlier. So CS50 is highlighted by three core elements: accessibility, culture, and rigor, making sure that students who would not maybe typically be exposed to computer science or have computer science background feel comfortable coming into our class, that they have fun in our class. We don't want it to be something that they come to and sit down and because they have to. We really want them to want to be there, and we find that by putting such an emphasis on culture as we do, this actually does work. Students really do want to come to class and be part of it. But we don't want to diminish any of the rigor. Keep maintaining the same rigor that we do at the college level, particularly where we are offering this class for many of you as high school instructors as an AP class. We want to make sure that we're bringing actually college level material to these students without watering it down. The only real change, as David mentioned, is that instead of compressing it into 12 or 13 weeks, as we're sort of constricted by the university schedule, we can spread it out over a full school year and give students the benefit of time that we wish we could also have our students here at the university use. And there are two models that we propose for teachers who want to bring CS50, whether CS50X or CS50AP, to their classrooms. And those are adopt and adapt. And what we basically mean by this is when you're adopting CS50, you are using CS50's materials as primary resources for your students. So your students are watching lecture videos, students are watching my videos, they're using RP sets. And your role in the classroom is to sort of serve in the same role as a section leader might here at the university, where you're circulating among your students, helping them debug problems that they might be solving in the classroom. So adopt is more of a flipped based model. And adapt is where, instead of having students watch what we're doing at the university, we instead immerse them in it themselves. So we're recreating the sorting demos in the classroom. You're using David's lecture materials as your primary resource for you to recreate these experiences for your students and hopefully draw them in even more. And in terms of what we see teachers who leave these workshops and go on to teach CS50, it's really kind of an even split. About 50% of our teachers are adopting it, using our resources for students, and the other 50% are recreating the resources in their classrooms. And the students are not watching us directly, but are getting that material through their teachers. So I want to run down a lot of tools that are part of the CS50 package. As we know, or I'm sure as you know, adapting and or bringing on a new class can be a bit of a challenge. There's a lot of legwork to be done, pulling all the right resources together. Our goal in this session is to sort of give you a very quick overview of all of those resources and how we've packaged our curriculum to hopefully make it as easy as possible for you to adapt it into your, with your school administration. And to that end, we've broken, we'll start with talking about tools, and there are a couple of different types of tools that we provide for teachers, starting with grading tools. So we have a tool called Check50. If you use CS50 IDE, you're probably familiar with this. This is a tool that is used to, it's basically a test suite where we're having students run their solution to a problem through 6 to 10 different tests that we have set up, and students know what those tests are. We annotate them. But we also use this for grading. So students will know exactly what sort of correctness score they're going to get on their assignment, with a couple of limited exceptions, by running Check50. If they run Check50 themselves and they see it's all smiley faces, they know they're probably going to do well in correctness. There are a couple of corner cases where students will hard code all of the answers just to pass the tests, and we can override it in that case. But generally, this is a teaching tool. This is a tool for us. We run Check50 to grade student submissions. In the future version of Check50, it will run when a student actually submits their code and auto-populate scores. We don't have to run it anymore. We don't have to do that extra step. But it certainly facilitates, particularly, for teachers. We have a couple of teachers who have 150, 200 students across multiple sections. That's a lot of time to grade, so we try and make that as easy as possible by implementing these auto-grading tools. We have another one called Style50, which David again mentioned, which auto-grades code for consistency with the CS50 style guide, and we can share a link to that style guide as part of the resources we distribute. Basically just trying to make sure that students are following the prescribed good style. Which really is a tool that makes our lives a lot easier. It doesn't really serve any purpose at least in C, in Python it certainly does. It doesn't serve much of a purpose in terms of computer readability for code to be well styled, but it can make my life as a grader a lot more difficult if stuff is all over the place. And so this tool advises students on the right, or a set of style rules that will hopefully help them and hopefully make our lives a little bit easier as well. Render50. So when I started teaching CS50, I would actually print out all of my students' code and using this tool or the original version of this tool. And we were always grading on correctness, design, and style. And we'll talk a little bit more about our grading philosophy tomorrow in a more in-depth session. But I would use my red pen for correctness and my blue pen for design and my green pen for style on these printed out PDFs. They were syntax highlighted. They were nice to use. So if you prefer that style of marking up students' code, this tool will make really nice PDFs organized with all the files that a student is turning in for that kind of markup. It's also just useful as well if you have simple examples that you've coded up that you want to distribute to your students to tweak for whatever reason. You can use Render50 for any file pretty much inside CS50 IDE. To generate a PDF of it, and then you can share that PDF. And it'll have like line numbers and all that stuff, so it's pretty useful. For each of our problems, we have grading guidelines in CS50 AP. We have in CS50X as well, if CS50X instance wants to use some of these problems. We've developed, in addition to the problem sets, which each of which comprise maybe 3 or 4 problems, we've probably developed an additional 25 or 30 problems specifically for the AP course to either test some things that we don't cover in CS50 that are covered in the CS Principles curriculum framework, or just to provide teachers with a different version of the same problems. And as we're bringing back older versions of problems we've asked in the past, just to have some flexibility in what might work for your students. Maybe they'll be more drawn to this kind of problem versus this kind of problem that both cover the same topic. And for each of those, we provide grading guidelines. Again, coming in, having not taught CS50 before, it can hopefully help to have some of our experience having graded this in the past to guide you into what might be, you know, a 5 in correctness here or 4 in design here or what have you. So those grading guidelines are sort of our attempt to bring our institutional knowledge for grading the problem sets to you. There's also a tool that we don't use that much in CS50 AP or X, but we do use it in CS50 at the college, and I do want to mention it. It's a tool called Gradescope. Are any of you familiar with Gradescope? One. So Gradescope is a pretty neat tool if you give paper quizzes for making it easier for you to grade them. So at the university, we give out 2 midterms, basically, which previously were on paper. Now we do this. We do a PDF, consistent PDF generating tool. But basically what it does is you can have your master version of the quiz where you print it out, you write all of your answers. That's the teacher version. You upload that to Gradescope, and then what happens is it creates like a PDF where each page is an image, and you can draw bounding boxes around the question. So maybe like question 1, the student has this much area to fill in the answer. You can draw a bounding box around all of the area where a student would have put question number 1's answer. And you can do that for every question, so you can create a template. Then you can upload, either by scanning them in or some other tool, all of your students' submissions. And what happens is when you do that, then it creates bounding boxes automatically around all of those. And how we use it is we will then grade all of the question 1's just 1 at a time. And it's through an online interface too. And there are shortcut keys and all that stuff. So we can like quickly read an answer and give it, you know, press the 1 key if it's right, press the 2 key if it's partially right. And then we can, you know, provide comments in a text field. And the comments get saved too, which is really nice. If you have students who are making the same error over and over, like a set of students, you can just quickly pull up the pre-saved comment. It's a really useful tool if you do give out paper quizzes and you can upload them and scan them just to make grading a lot faster. At least we have found that when a teaching fellow is grading the same question over and over and over, as opposed to grading the entire test and then going back to the beginning over and over, it really does speed up efficiency. So I share it with you because we have used it to great effect at the college for our large-scale midterms where this kind of grading is required. It's free for teachers to use as well. So if you want to check it out, you can head to Gradescope's website. CS50.me, how many of you have seen CS50.me? Okay, a few more of you. So CS50.me rolled out this past February, I think. It was earlier this spring for CS50X and for CS50 at the Extension School. And what it is it's our sort of new teacher and student hub. As a student, what you do is you log in. You can see all of the assignments that you've turned in. You can see your grades on all of those assignments, as well as links to the GitHub repository where they were submitted, where your teacher might be able to provide comments in GitHub. And as a teacher, what you can do is you can create sections that your students will then opt into. So you can see all of your students' work pulled into this one spot. You can then grade by student, you can grade by problem, you can provide inline comments to students' code on GitHub. And again, we'll go over all of this tomorrow. We're quite in depth using CS50.me just to see all the functionality that it has. But it basically allows you to provide qualitative feedback for students using an online interface. So you know, you don't have to, if you don't want to, print out PDFs of your students' code to give them your feedback. You can actually provide it inline on GitHub. And what's great about that too is that for those of you who are familiar with GitHub, if you comment on a repository, the owner of that repository then gets an email telling them that you've commented on it. And you can actually have a conversation, and we've actually had conversations with students, like we'll provide a piece of feedback to the student. They can then write back in another comment, and you can write back. So it actually can provide this really nice conversation, which hopefully facilitates more learning, because it's not just one and done sort of giving a piece of feedback and then hoping that the student does something with it. You can actually have this nice conversation about it. So some of the grading tools that we offer as part of the CS50 curriculum package. In terms of learning tools, the CS50 IDE, I'm sure you're all familiar with that by now. So this is an integrated coding environment. It's pre-configured for CS50. It is basically a virtual machine in the cloud, which is nice for those of you who have encountered issues with the IT department in your school before, trying to get certain software installed in your computers to make for students to be able to do work. Everything in CS50 IDE is entirely based in the web. So as long as they have access to a browser, they can access their CS50 work from anywhere. This is also great, too, because students can start their assignments at school and then go home, log in using the exact same credentials, and the work is exactly the same. They can pick it up and go in either direction. So that's very nice. This works on Chromebooks as well, for those of you who are in Chromebook districts. It's an improvement over the CS50 appliance. Did any of you use the CS50 appliance? Couple of you. So CS50 appliance was a virtual machine that required you to install a hypervisor like VMware, which Chromebooks do not support. So the ability to move this to the web was really what empowered us to be able to bring this to high schools, where we know that Chromebooks are a big thing. We can now move all of the students' work to the cloud and work from there. This environment is free of charge, thanks to our friends at Cloud9, with whom we collaborated to develop CS50 ID. In fact, one of my former colleagues, Dan, now works in Amsterdam at Cloud9. He wrote the CS50 instance for Cloud9 and now works at Cloud9. So that's pretty cool. It's free of charge, though, and it will continue to be free of charge for the foreseeable future, as far as we are aware. It's what's also nice about it is when students, if they decide to continue programming, Cloud9 was deliberately developed as a developer's environment in the cloud. So this is now providing students with a real business, like a real tool that is used by developers, very similar to like an Eclipse or an offline IDE that you might use if you teach CSA, for example. Students can go forth and use this to do pretty much anything. And there is more than just the CS50 pre-configured instance available on Cloud9. So if you go to cs50.io, you've pretty much been automatically brought to that. That is just one of several different flavors of Linux or Ubuntu instances that you can install on the Cloud9 site. If you go to your Cloud9 dashboard, you can actually choose. There's one pre-configured for Ruby or for PHP. That have different sets of packages that are pre-installed on top of the basic Ubuntu instance. So if you haven't yet explored that, I encourage you to do so. There's also offline CS50 IDE, which this would not work on a Chromebook because it would require a hypervisor. But basically, it uses Docker, and the environment is basically exactly the same as what they would experience online, with the exception that it doesn't sync to the cloud unless they have online connectivity. But for those of you who live in districts where students do not have consistent access to the internet at home but do have access to a computer at home, they can download a version of the offline IDE, perhaps by bringing the computer to school, having an internet connection to download it there. And then using Docker, they can run an environment that is identical to CS50 IDE at home when they don't have online access. Then they can bring their computer back to school, and they can sync up, they can sync it to the cloud, and get everything kind of, it's a couple extra steps, but it does facilitate that option for those of you who do work in or live in those areas where some or many of your students perhaps don't have consistent internet access at home. Another learning tool available for students and for teachers is CS50 Reference. This is a friendlier version of man pages. I know when I was taking CS50 and I was encouraged to look at a man page, I would look at it and be like, what is all of this confusing language? So we try to make that a little bit gentler for students. We have a less comfortable and more comfortable mode. The more comfortable mode in Reference is the man page, and the less comfortable mode is us humans translating all of that into more friendly English sentences that make sense. We also provide some examples in there that supplement the man page so that students can see some of these things in action, how you might use these functions, for example. So it's a great place to go. And this covers pretty much the entire C standard library plus the CS50 library, how to use all of the functions, examples for all of the functions. You can actually check it out now. It's currently undergoing a bit of a facelift, but that tool is available. Yes.
Man page.
So man page is the Linux programmer's manual page. And if you are in a Linux environment and you type like man printf, it will pull up a more arcane explanation of printf as a Linux programmer's guide to printf. It's pretty okay. Like, you can understand it if you are parsing it, but there's also a lot of extra stuff in there that is overwhelming, I think, to particularly a new programmer. And so this is just a friendlier version of how to use printf, basically. But if you haven't yet seen a man page, I encourage you to, everybody should have that experience at least once in their life. So then we have our CS50 online communities. One of the things that we're very fortunate to have here at the university is a very large teaching staff for the class. So we have, on average 700 to 800 students per semester across Harvard and Yale and the Extension School. And we're very lucky to have a staff of about 80 teaching fellows and course assistants who help with this, who are able to make it such that office hours can have 150 people at office hours, and we have 25 staff to throw at it. I'm guessing most of you do not have access to 80 staff members that you can bring into your classroom. If you can, that's great. But if not, we do have a number of online communities that are moderated by volunteers who have gone through CS50X, and they're actually quite good about when folks ask questions, not just saying, here's the code for the answer, but really trying to step into the role of a teaching fellow and ask leading questions and sort of guide students in the right direction. So we've had a number of teachers who have expressed that this has been a lifesaver for them, where they can encourage their students to leverage the online community of sort of virtual teaching fellows, virtual course assistants to help them, where maybe you're walking around your class and there's one student who's struggling with something and you're kind of stuck, and there's another student who wants your time and they're a little bit more comfortable. You can encourage them to ask that question on one of the online communities, and you can be reasonably assured that they're not going to just be given a big chunk of code back. Like, that just doesn't happen that frequently. And it's also just a great way for students in other CS50 instances, whether in your same town or across the country or across the world, to actually just get to know one another. We've had a number of experiences of classes in CS50 AP, one in Mexico and one in New York City, jumping out at me, where they went through the assignment together. They set it up as a pair programming assignment with one from each country, which is really cool. Like, and just the ability to have that sort of online community, that sort of collaboration. And we'll also talk a little bit more about how students can actually collaborate in CS50 IDE as well a little bit later. And then we have a number of widgets. Particularly if you are inclined as a programmer to develop sort of JavaScript widgets, we'd love to hear from you as well. But we've been curating this set of different online widgets, some of which we integrate into our problem sets or problems, some of which we just have links to. So binary bulbs is used to teach binary numbers. Indoors is used to teach linear search and binary search for students, where in one of the sets, the numbers are totally random, and the other set, they're ordered, and students have to try and figure out the most efficient way to open as few doors as possible to figure out what it is. But it's just an opportunity for students to have some sort of interactive way to reinforce some of the lessons they might have heard in lecture or the shorts or section or your class. So if you are particularly inclined to write such things, we'd love to hear from you as well to help curate and make this set of widgets a little bigger. But those are available. And then we have teaching tools that are primarily directed to you as instructors. So there's cs50.harvard.edu/AP. This is the CS50 AP sort of home. If you go there now, you'll find everything in our curriculum, some of which we'll talk about in just a few minutes. It's also an opportunity to create a teacher website where you can clone, basically, our curriculum and create a teacher website for your class where you can toggle things on and off. This will be undergoing a little bit of a revamp as well, but we're going to walk you through it a little bit later today. You'll learn how to do this if you'd like. Excuse me. Everything that we have pretty much tried to aggregate, we put there. So we've taken David's lectures, which are, there are 12 or 13 of them. They're long form lectures. We try and break them out into individual topics so that here are all the videos that we have on loops from lecture. Here are all the videos we have on loops from shorts. Here are the sort of different practice questions that we'll ask in sections. Here are some practice problems for these. If you are interested in the curriculum framework mapping, that is all there for each topic as well. So we try and pull everything that you would hopefully need as an instructor into one spot for you, and then you can decide to toggle some of those resources on and off for your students as well. So you can use it in both directions. CS50 AP discusses a forum that we've used in the past for teachers to ask questions of one another and to get and to share resources with one another. We have also created a CS50 Educators Facebook group, which you should be able to find if you just go into Facebook and search for CS50 Educators and just let us know. There'll be a couple of questions that are asked if you try and sign up for it. Just mention that you're here at the workshop and Aaron will approve your account as soon as possible. But it is the new version of that forum for teachers to share resources with one another. We've seen folks setting up hackathons across schools because they can figure out who's near them. So it's a great opportunity to just collaborate with other teachers, not just hearing from us, but hearing amongst all of you. And of course, if everybody is comfortable, we'll also be happy to share everybody's emails from this event with one another, especially if you make some connections during the weekend, so that you don't lose touch, you don't have to go through the Facebook group, you can just reach out to one another. If you have any concerns about me sharing your email address, let me know and we'll take that off, but otherwise we would generally share that out at the end so you guys can have those connections. Study.cs50.net is a tool that is now, thanks to some changes that we're making this summer, going to be kind of absorbed into some of the other things you've seen here. But it is, again, sample extra slides for students, extra practice problems, an integrated web-based, small, not full version of the IDE, but just a small environment for students to write some code and quickly run it to see if it works. So it's just more interactivity for students there. CS50 Quiz Bank is a tool where students can go to see some of the quiz questions that we have asked in the past. The quiz questions that we ask are probably, on average, harder than the things that they would see on the CSP exam, for example. But within the quiz bank, we have the questions, the answers, what topics they cover, everything sort of tagged and categorized, and then explanations of the answers as well. And as a teacher, you can actually log into the quiz bank and use our bank of questions to create an actual quiz. You can actually check the boxes on the questions and generate a PDF or a Word doc, so you could then hand it out to students as well if you wanted to. And this uses all of the questions that we have asked in quizzes for the last 10 years. And then in addition to all of those tools, now let's pivot and talk about some of the resources that are available to you as instructors and that your students would use. So we have, of course, lectures. We have, in addition to the video, we have notes of these, transcripts of them for students who would rather read them. We have audio files of them. And these are all excerpted topically for CS50 AP. For CS50X, of course, those resources already exist. So if you're teaching a CS50X instance, you know where to find those videos anyway. You've seen them. And you've seen those notes and transcripts. We've done the same thing for AP as well. In addition to, and I'll show you this on the video player live in a second as well. We have a video player where we, this past fall, created some additional functionality which you may have seen if you've been following CS50X online. In addition to just the regular camera mode, there's also picture-in-picture mode. So you might be able to, it's a little tough to tell because the projector is kind of being quite small. But at the top left corner there, there's a version of exactly what is on the slide here. So the students don't have to think about like, oh, what is that? Or maybe if it's a wider shot, they can't see it. And you can actually click on the thing at the top left and toggle between them. So you can have the main lecture be smaller in the top left corner and have just the code or whatever is being projected on the slides in the middle. So that's kind of a nice feature for students who want to be able to have that experience of, wait, what's on the screen? Hold on. And then just toggle between whatever mode is perhaps more effective for them. In addition, we've embedded the transcripts into each lecture video so that you can actually pull up a search box on the right and you can get a table of contents for the lecture. The table of contents is created by us where we, again, are breaking things down by topic and students could jump or you could jump to specific chapters. And there's also a search box at the top so that if I search for the word condition here, I can find literally every time in the lecture David is talking about conditions in this lecture. And each of those is itself a hyperlink such that a student could then click on it and be immediately brought to that section of the lecture to hear exactly what is being said about conditions in that case. And maybe there was a concept that they were struggling with and they want to hear it again or they want to see it again, they can just search for that word and it will pull up every time that it shows up in that lecture and students can replay it. Let me show you this actually live. I think it's a good thing to show.
Yeah, input you want to count, you need to put down one of these letters.
So this is the main mode, and I have just the searchable, or just the table of contents up there right now.
Even if you've not
really turn the volume up a little bit.
The computers only understand zeros and ones, the so-called binary system. We humans, by
so he just said binary, so I can look for every time he said binary.
Insofar as we understand,
and we'll pull up all of those instances. Here's the picture-in-picture mode here. It's going to just switch for a second. And I can toggle between the two different options. If your students are particularly inclined, we also, you may have heard, recorded our lecture videos this past year in virtual reality. So this is going to take a second to load, and the quality will not be as great because it's on a camera and not in a set of goggles. But this will actually transport you to being a student in Sanders Theater. And as well, if you look down, you can actually see what is on the screen instead of having to look right there or at the slides at the top, so that you can have that sort of picture-in-picture mode again as well. But if students are particularly inclined to be transported to Sanders for lecture, they can do so using perhaps a Google Cardboard headset, or if you have virtual reality equipment in your classroom. It's always the transition that's tough. How what? Of the video player from fall 2016.
Okay.
So if you've been following on CS50X, it should link the video. The video should link you to the video player where you could use it. But we've been using this for about 8 or 9 months now. So again, our lectures are available in virtual reality. It's still a technology that is growing. Obviously, the quality is it's not quite totally immersive. But we think it's just a fun way to get students feeling more tied to Harvard and remind them, like, yes, you are taking a Harvard University class. You are doing the same kind of work as Harvard University students. If you want, you can take the lecture in the same spot if you can transport yourself mentally to that location. So Google Cardboards are available. You can actually just go to Google Cardboard or google.com/cardboard. They're $15 a piece for those. And then, of course, there are other headsets that would, like an Oculus Rift or something. They're more expensive, of course. But it's kind of nice. Like they literally send you like a piece of flat cardboard, and it's like, fold here, cut here, and whatever. And you just kind of just follow all the steps. It has like Velcro. And you can slide in an Android phone into it. And most phones nowadays that are running like Android, at least 6, will just know that they're in virtual reality mode and can immerse themselves in it. So practice exercises. So we have code examples, slides. One of the things we're really working on this summer is generating even more of these. Our goal is to have like 8 to 10 different practice exercises for every topic that we cover in the class. So 8 to 10 exercises on loops, 8 to 10 exercises on hash tables, like everything you can think of, with examples of, with code examples, with slides, all of that available for students and for you. The shorts, I was joking about my polo shirt. I'm always wearing different colored ones in them, which are supposed to actually clue students into roughly where we are in the course. There is a rhyme and reason to it. But these are opportunities for me to recap the topic that David covered in lecture and go a little more in depth into those topics than we can do in the lecture time, because we're covering so many topics in the course of 90 minutes to 2 hours. So these videos are between 5 to 25 minutes where I'm digging a little bit deeper into all of those topics, with slides, with videos, with code examples for students to follow along with. The problems, as I mentioned, we have about 50 or so, 55 or so problems for CS50 AP, and of course all the problems from CS50 at the university are available as well. We have specifications for them, so we have our narrative write-ups for them. Grading guidelines, solutions for them, which are available to you and not to the students, because that wouldn't be very fun. We have sample schedules. We can provide some sample schedules. So if you let us know some of the constraints of your school schedule, if you're a 36-week, if you have students for 36 weeks and you have them for every day for 40 minutes, or you have them for 30 weeks and you have them 4 times a week for 80 minutes or whatever, we can provide some guidance. We can't cover every possible scenario, but we can try and provide a general schedule for you. In addition to just handing you the syllabus and saying this is the way we recommend presenting things, we can say, like, here's roughly how much time we would recommend for these things, if that would be helpful. And then curriculum mappings, which I know is crucial for some of you to get courses approved by your administration. We are fully mapped, of course, to APCS principals, who recently endorsed our curriculum. We are fully mapped to CSTA's standards through 2017. We, I believe, are mapped to CTE for students of vocational schools, if that is something that you need an alignment for. If there are other things that you need alignments for, let Aaron know, and we can try and get working on that for you. We might have it partially completed and not fully completed, but we know that these things are super important, particularly in public schools. So let us know if you need a particular mapping of our curriculum to some set of standards, and we'll do what we can to help get that taken care of. There's also CS50 Explained. So CS50 Explained is a resource intended primarily for teachers, although it is available to everybody. It was that last of the four buttons I didn't actually show in the video player, because I was going to show this slide in a second. But basically what this is sort of Mystery Science Theater 3000 style. This is David and I watching the lecture several months after we filmed it. And you might notice in the top left corner there, there's a VR camera, so you can actually be in VR. You can sit between us. We're like uncomfortably close, which we didn't realize at the time. But we'll share popcorn with you virtually. But if you can hear us behind the scenes talking about how the lecture went, what worked and what didn't work, why we teach things the way that we do. So it's just an opportunity, again, to dig a little bit more behind the scenes after this workshop is over. We're going to try and cover as much as we possibly can into why we do what we do and how we do what we do. It's just an opportunity to sit down with us and watch the lecture with us and hear us providing commentary on the lecture, why we did this demo the way we did, how we thought this demo worked, what we would have done differently next time, and so on. Walkthroughs are designed for students to unstick them, and also for teachers to use as a first line of defense for the student who's like, I don't know where to start. And then you say, have you watched the walkthrough? And they get, you get a blank stare, and it's like, okay, well, you do that. We certainly use that at office hours. Who are, you know, struggling with how to approach the course's problems. There's not a lot of code that is given away in here. It's really, I don't even know where to begin. What concept do I start by thinking about? These are, of course, led by Zamyla, our walkthrough leader extraordinaire. It's really funny in office hours to, or even just walking around like a dining hall, you'll just find, she's found it like strange to like walk in and see her face on like 80 computers. But she's wonderful, and she's certainly has helped many a student figure out where to even begin on a problem. And so many of the problems for CS50 AP, also she has recorded walkthroughs for, and we have embedded them where possible into the AP specs so that students have that familiar face to guide them through the problem. Postmortems, we have not previously released these for CS50 AP, but we do believe we can do so now. These are explanations of the problems designed after the fact, so students have turned it in. Perhaps if your teaching style is that students have an opportunity to resubmit something after turning it in with some feedback, this would be intended for after all of that was done. And this is an explanation of the problems, how they should have been solved or how we solved them, as well as some source code for students to take a look at after the fact, so they never feel like, oh, I didn't really get that problem, like I guess I'm just kind of going to have to move on. And this, we don't want students to feel like, you know, they're kind of stuck, like they can't go anywhere from here. So we provide this as an extra learning opportunity for students to look back on what they did, hopefully learn something from it. These are led by Rob. And again, many of our problems have these postmortems, which are videos, occasionally slides, and source code for students for there are solutions to the problems, so that they're at least getting those solutions and they can hopefully learn something extra from that as a last opportunity to learn from that problem and move on. Yes?
Is that somehow protected in terms of getting access to that?
Or? So the question was, is that somehow protected in terms of getting it? And the answer is yes. There's a login system that can be used to track who has seen it. The links are generally, yeah. It's not like, we don't post, here's the YouTube link to it. There's a way they have to go, students have to go through it to get it. So we would know who saw them. And then, in the event that something is not covered, there is a site called cs50.tv. cs50.tv is literally everything we can possibly think of that we have ever done lives there. It is updated at the end of every fall semester at the course. So if you go to cs50.tv, you can choose fall 2007, and you can see all the lectures we gave in fall 2007, the videos of them, notes, transcripts, all the problem sets we gave in 2007, if there are different versions of the shorts, or sections, or lectures. And we have found this helpful too, where students or teachers will report like, oh, this video on binary search didn't really land well with my students, but I remember when I took CS50 myself in 2014, that was super helpful. You can actually go there and pull the 2014 version of it. point students to it. It's totally open. Anybody can access all of this. Solutions are not posted on csvg.tv, but the problems are. So really, everything we've ever offered over the last 10 years, we've tried to organize it nicely in AP or elsewhere. But so it's not give you 11 versions of the same thing and have you pick one. Everything is there. So if you do feel like there is some other resource that you wish you had, check there first to see if it's there. It probably is. And if it's not, then email us and we will do what we can to create that resource so that you have it and we can share it with the community. Also, at the end of every CS50 semester, students create a final project. As you know, our course stops at JavaScript, but we have found over the last several years that students are increasingly creating mobile apps, which we don't even cover at all in CS50 for their final projects. And to that end, several years ago, we asked TFs, teaching fellows here at the university, who have some experience or interest in a particular topic to host one-hour seminars at the end of the lectures. So after the students have attended the last lecture, just before, and before students would go to the hackathon, for example, to start working on their final projects. So it'd be an hour-long crash course in Swift or Objective-C or Ruby on Rails or something like that. And all of these are available as well. These are not part of the core curriculum of CS50. But we do have another set of these for the last 8 years or so when we started hosting them, where teaching fellows take a deep dive into just one specific topic that might be the starting point for some follow-on after CS50. Like maybe this is what interests you. You can go on from there. I had a great question yesterday. Where do I go after CS50? And the answer is kind of anywhere. There's not one right answer for the right class to take afterwards. Last year, I think we curated a list of MOOCs that are available, or online courses that are available for if you're interested in data science, or if you're interested in mobile app development, or if you're interested in Ruby. And we can find that and share that with you as well. But there is no one way to go after CS50. It's a class for majors and non-majors here at the university. So it is intended as a terminal class for those folks who want to have some CS background knowledge, but don't really intend to go forward. And even here at the university, there are two follow-on classes that one could take after CS50, CS51 and CS61, and then, of course, tons and tons of upper-level electives going from there, all of which cover different aspects of computer science. So it really is intended, the seminars are intended to showcase to students some of the possibilities of where they can go, having now just spent, in our case, 12 weeks, or in your case, 36 weeks or so, learning these fundamentals of computer science. Now, here are all the things that you can do from here, if you'd like. So the problem sets at the university, there are 9 of them. You're familiar with some of them for sure. These are the list of problems that we have for CS50 AP. Several of these are just exploded out versions of the problem sets themselves, several of which are also offered in standard and hacker editions. So if you do have students with a diversity of background coming into your class, some students are particularly strong, some students have no experience whatsoever, they can solve 2 different versions of the same problem. And this list is constantly growing as well. Academic honesty is an issue, certainly in computer science classes anywhere. These are some of the tools that we use to detect academic dishonesty in CS50, several of which these are available for teachers to use as well. And we also include a very lengthy explanation of what is academically honest and dishonest in our syllabus. What we're really trying to do here is culture students and train students on what is okay in the education space versus what is okay in the workspace, because those two things are not equal. And for students who are coming in and don't have this experience, don't have any experience at all knowing about this, it's really easy to conflate those two things and be like, well, I found something on Stack Overflow where some programmer is talking about how he pulled something from Stack Overflow and used it in his code, so I can do the same thing. In industry, sure, but the goal here is not to program something that's going to be used in industry. The goal here is to learn about something and understand something. And so we try and draw those, make those lines very clear for students. What is academically acceptable? What is not? We generally boil our academic honesty policy down to this. When asking for help, you may show your code to others, but you may not view theirs. You can ask somebody else to assist you, but you cannot sort of poke your head around and see what they're typing and sort of follow after it. Of course, this system can be gained by 2 students just kind of circularly doing this. Doesn't happen really all that frequently. Certainly a corner case that does exist. But generally, we have found this to be a pretty reasonable parameter for students to follow. They can ask we do encourage collaboration in the class. We do want students to certainly to also help take the burden off of us as instructors, to not necessarily turn to us for every question, but maybe you have particularly strong students who might be sort of proxies for teaching fellows, where they're completing the problem sets or the problems on day one of release out of a 5-day amount of time for students to turn it in. Like, maybe those students can become sort of walking teaching fellows on that, or subject matter experts on that problem, and you can deploy them and have your students turn to them for help, which just fosters a nice collaborative spirit in the class, which sort of dovetails nicely with the just the culture of the class generally, trying to be a fun, different experience. Not only are you getting help from your teachers, you're working with your classmates, you're getting help from your classmates. It really does make it feel like more of a team effort, everybody getting through the class together. The course officially has no recommended, no required reading, but we do recommend a number of different books for students who want to have some extra books to review materials. These are generally listed in order of increasing complexity or increasing level of comfort with computer science coming in. So the Absolute Beginner's Guide to C is, of course, a beginner's guide to C. And we'll go into a lot of detail on some of the basic stuff that will exist in the language. Whereas Hacker's Delight, on the other hand, would cover some of the more complex things that might be covered in Hacker Editions or covered in the fast track units of CS50 AP, which we don't cover necessarily for CS principles, but go a little bit beyond that even for students who are more advanced. And just gives them an opportunity to, again, not feel like they are waiting for everybody else to catch up to them, which was certainly something we don't want to have happen, but gives them an opportunity to explore some of the features of the languages. These are all focused on C primarily, but gives them an opportunity to explore some of the features of the language that go a little bit more advanced, and just gives them an opportunity to be a bit more creative. So I mentioned earlier that we don't have CS50 in a box. We do actually have some boxes that are really our boxes. And these are our events in a box. So we have 4 different events that we run once each here at the university. And one of these events we'd actually recommend that you might want to run multiple times, perhaps. The first of these is CS50 Puzzle Day. We offer this actually twice annually, once at the college. And it's at the very beginning of the term. So our first lecture this year is Friday, September 1st. And our Puzzle Day is Saturday, September 2nd. So it is not, it expects no computer science knowledge whatsoever. It is an opportunity for students to get together with their peers, to get to know some of the other people in the class, working on and solving problems that have nothing to do with computer science whatsoever. We also offer it again in the winter time for CS50X to have, again, sort of global collaboration. Instead of it being 3 hours as it is at the college, it is 3 days. For CS50X Puzzle Day, because people will be working in different time zones, which is really cool. And in there we have puzzles, which are written usually by me, and probably I'll have to start writing them like Monday. solutions to the puzzles, music recommendations from Colton, so you can sort of create this the same environment that we create here at the university as well. Recommendations for running the event itself, sort of like a playbook if you wanted to do that. Just all of sort of the tips and tricks and strategies that we've accumulated over a couple years of running this event to hopefully try and make it as easy as possible to run it yourself. And literally in the box as well, we'll have a couple of like little swag giveaways that you can use as prizes or as random raffles or something like that, just so your students feel more tied to the community and have these CS50 things to take with them. If you are interested in one of these boxes, just let us know. We're going to send out something probably in a week or two. Now that we're nearing the end of the summer, where we'll ask if you want us to send you one of these kits, and you can provide us with the information that we need to send it, and we will send it your way. So the CS50 Hackathon is an event that we hold about 1 week before the students turn in their final projects, acknowledging that our students are in college, and many of them who should be working on their final projects at this point have not started their final projects at this point. It gives us an opportunity to have them work together in a 12-hour sort of marathon overnight session to finish or start or somewhere in between their final projects. As David mentioned, we've actually had this event in the high school setting as well. We've traveled a couple times to New York City for these hackathons. We do not run them all night there. We do more 10 to 3 kind of thing, or 11 to 4 on a weekend or something like that. But we have found that this is actually just a great way to re-inject some energy back into the class, which is why we would actually recommend, if you can or you want to run this event a couple of times throughout your school year. If students are, maybe they're going through the create task or the explore task or something, and they're just a little drained, or maybe it's been like a long couple of slogs through the sorting algorithms and they're just feeling a little bit drained, like you can have a hackathon, bring everybody together, work on a problem, work on one of the new problems, have students do something creative for themselves. It just injects a lot of energy back into the class and can be used in that way too. So again, we'll similarly send out a request if you're interested in a hackathon box, and you can let us know and we'll send it out to you. The CS50 Fair, of course, is our end of year opportunity to showcase students' final projects. The focus there is really all on the students. We invite the entire campus to come to our fair. We invite local members of the community as well. Lately, the last several years, we've invited high schools. If you are local to Boston or to New Haven around the time we're offering this, which would be the second, I think it's December 8th and 11th, that week, that around that time in December, and you want to attend the CS50 Fair, bring your students to the CS50 Fair and see what the college students have done. And then by that point, you're about halfway through your school year. Reminds the students, like, this is the kind of thing that you can do too. By the time you're done with this class, you'll have learned all the same stuff. It's just a lot of fun. It brings a ton of energy. One of our teachers who lives in Ohio, Angela, she invited like state senators and stuff, and she had like 18 or 19 students take her class, and the fair had like 300 something attendees or something. The students were totally overwhelmed and blown away by just how much the community like really focused on them and came to celebrate what they had done. And it just, we all like to, you know, have the things that we do be celebrated and acknowledged, right? So just having the students have an opportunity to have spent a year learning something, create something entirely of their own volition, and then have people from like, you know, political folks or their parents or their friends or their friends' parents or whoever, like everybody just comes to the gym and sees what they did and is excited about it. Like it's very inspiring, I think. And then a new thing that we debuted this past year is the CS50 Coding Contest. So this is really the only, unlike Puzzle Day, this one is more focused on problem solving for, in a computer science context. We offered this halfway through the term, after the first midterm, just to give folks a break. And it's totally optional here at the college. But it's nice, we had like a little Harvard versus Yale thing going on. And it is an opportunity to have sort of this inter-school competition. We can have like leaderboards set up, and we use a tool called HackerRank, if you've heard of it before. We create problems there, and then students can create log in with an account, and then solve the problems. And unlike Check 50, they don't really get a lot of information about what tests are actually running. They just know that they passed a certain number of tests, but it doesn't tell them what they failed on, so they have to really kind of figure it out. But it was a lot of fun. The tool, HackerRank. And then these are a couple of pictures actually from that fair, from Angela's fair. This is near the beginning of the setup, so these are a couple of her students showing off their projects. And we also showed Angela how to set up a quick photo booth on her Windows machine with a like regular small digital camera. And she was able to create a photo booth pretty easily, putting it on like one of those like library carts to stabilize it. And all these information, again, we would include like in the kit. So if you wanted to like learn how to set up a photo booth, like we could set it up there too. Having this was actually quite an innovation that we didn't realize would be so impactful. Like, especially if you can get the ones that print out the little strips, or now we actually often set them up to sync to a Twitter account, so it like just tweets out the photos. Just to have that like memento, that takeaway from it. Like it's actually, a lot of folks will use the photo booth more than we expected. So for those of you who are teaching, an AP class, I want to talk quickly about the CS Principles mission, or sort of also our mission, because we are teaching a CS Principles class. And it has long been our mission actually at CS50 is to get more students interested in computer science, particularly those who would not naturally be drawn to it. 75%-ish of our students come in reporting that they have never taken a computer science class before. They have no computer science background. As you saw, about 60% of students say that they are less comfortable with computers overall. And we think that's a good thing. Like getting folks who would not take a CS class to take a CS class, like that's kind of our goal as computer science teachers, right? Is to show them that this is not just somebody sitting in a dark room in front of a monitor with a green text writing things, right? Like this is, you know, athletes like reviewing or designing, or coaches like designing plays, or you know, fashion designers like designing apparel on there. Like it applies everywhere, right? Like art, history, like computer science pervades everything. And having an opportunity to sort of break this mold of what computer science is a great opportunity that CS Principles is affording. So CSA, as you may know, a couple years ago had 30,000 students. And this past year, they had doubled that to 60,000 students. And CS Principles itself, which just had its first exam this past May, they had 50,000 students. And presumably, there was not a lot of people who took CSA and then took CSP. So this is probably mostly like 50,000 students who might not have taken a CS class before. So we're clearly in the middle of, there's a wave here, right, where this is gaining interest, and this is an opportunity to reframe the discussion about computer science. And so we're very happy to be part of that, and hopefully have you be part of it as well, so we can get more folks interested in CS. All right, so that's it for me on this one. We're going to take a couple-minute break, and then we're going to do some breakouts where if you're teaching a CS50 AP class and you want to hear about the CS50's alignment to the CS Principles curriculum framework and how we do it and exactly what the class looks like and an arc of the class would look like, we would encourage you to stay here in this room. If you're teaching CS50X or teaching adult learners, we're going to have a session as well led by Christian talking about some of our folks, for example, in Nicaragua and Miami-Dade College, other universities that are teaching CS50 at the university level or teaching adult learners. So if that is something you are interested in instead, you can head to room 104, which is just outside across the hall. We'll certainly lead you over there. But for now, we'll take a couple minute break and we'll reconvene back in here and in 104 in like 5 or so minutes. Thank you.